Hi, and welcome to another exciting edition of the 7 Minutes Podcast. This is going to be episode 20. I am Zach. To my left and right are, hopefully they'll tell you.
Hello, I'm Angela.
My name is Robert.
Awesome.
Wow, 20, huh?
Yeah, that's right.
Wow.
I'm just a little older than the number of podcasts we've done.
Just a little.
You?
Yeah. About 25, you know.
Yeah, we got a ways to go. Yeah, a long road left to travel before we reach the crotchety old age of Robert.
Yeah, whatever.
My condolences on your continued plunge into senescence.
What?
Senescence.
What is that?
Old age. Same old. Root as senile.
I see. The linguist.
So we're here to talk about, believe it or not, something that has to do with both the 90s and Nintendo here on 7 Minutes, the podcast, which is nominally about video games in general, but continues to veer towards talking about the 90s and or Nintendo. This time, we're talking about Nintendo Power, which was, I think, a central fixture in all the childhoods of a lot of Nintendo fans back in the day. Mm-hmm. We'll get into it. But before we get into it, we're going to talk about what we've been playing since the last time we recorded, or thereabouts. Angela.
I mean, look, I'll just be frank. We're recording back to back, one day after the other. You know, Thanksgiving is this week, and, you know, just ensuring that we have enough content moving into the Christmas season. So, as I said yesterday, although to you viewers it will have been, I think, a span of maybe 2 weeks.
Probably.
a lot of Animal Crossing New Horizons, the Happy Home Paradise DLC. I can see it on the TV just to my left, beckoning, calling me back to it.
You have some exciting new Happy Home projects you've been working on, like one for a weird octopus person.
Yep, that was Octavian. Zach was amused by how angry he is. I built him I think his prompt was a window to the sea. So I built him a very cute little,
Beach Boy shack.
Beach Boys kind of 50s. Like it's got a mix of like modern and, mid-century modern sensibilities, but all surrounding, you know, kind of like a beachy vibe. I thought it came out really well. But, right now, I am in the middle of, and I mean that literally the screen is currently on and to my left, but, in the middle of making Molly, a quote, tiny publishing house, because she's this little duckling and she's a big reader, and her dream was to have a little publishing house. So I'm making her this cute little like combo, you know, in-house publishing house as along with an actual house.
How does she turn pages?
With her little wings?
Yeah.
Easily.
Cartoon logic. All good.
Yeah, but that is what I have been playing, you know, since yesterday.
Right. Yeah, and for me it's just continued to be Assassin's Creed Valhalla.
Yeah.
Remains good. I've almost got the legendary sword Excalibur. Not much else to say beyond that. It's a long, slow, good game.
Well, I'm going to switch things up a little bit and discuss the fact that yesterday in the mail, my Hobonichi Techo arrived for the year 2022. So I already have the planner, but the cover came in the mail from Australia. It is the Mother 3 cover, which is a bright, brilliant yellow, and it's covered in the little pixel art characters from Mother 3.
Why don't you
take
a breath and explain what Hobonichi Techo is.
I'm so glad you asked. So, for those who don't know, the creator of Earthbound.
I'm going to play some Mario Kart while this is happening.
Wow.
Take me with you.
Zach can help me with the pronunciation. Shigesato Itoi? Is that how he said?
I don't know, man. You're the one who fetishizes this guy and all of his works.
You're the one who's vaguely able to speak Japanese. Anyway, Itoi. He has his company, which makes these day planners, and they were exclusive to Japan for the start, but in, for the past 8 years, this is the 8th one that I've gotten now, at least, they've been starting to put them in English. And so it's always a little bit of an adventure to get them. Most shops at least, you know, we're in the Bay Area here in California. Most shops around here don't stock them at all. There's actually a store in Japantown in San Francisco called Maito that does Japanese stationery. And I had asked them, you know, you have all these other Japanese notebooks and planners. Why don't you put the Teco? And the girl was like, if we stocked these, it would be mayhem to sell them. It's just not worth it, basically. So
did she mean like they'd get bum rushed by people?
Yes. Well, okay. Like all it would just turn into an absolute zoo.
Okay.
And so, you know, I don't blame her. I refuse to order things off Amazon if I can help it. So I got mine through JetPens, the actual the Teco planner. And it's an A6 size, so it's a pretty small notebook. Every page is grid paper, which I really love. It's also very friendly for people who want to use it for drawing instead of writing. But it's just a beautifully made planner. And then the covers, you slip the planner into the cover. And then in true Japanese fashion, you can then protect the cover with another cover, which is the cover on a cover. So when I got my cover yesterday, I was like, man, you know, I forgot to order the cover on a cover for this one. But I was almost positive I had one extra, and I did. I had given one to a student, but I was like, I think I still have one more beyond it. And I found it last night. And so it's all ready to go for
January. Can she use certainly the cover on a cover, the clear plastic wrap, can be reused from one year to the next, right?
Well, see, I want to keep the other covers protected at all times.
But you're not, the other ones aren't going to be in use, right?
Like, I mean, theoretically not.
Why do you need to protect the cover of like the 2018 Hobonichi Teco?
Because it's beautiful and I don't want it to be damaged.
But it's just, whatever. Okay.
It's wonderful. So, I bought a new cover almost every year except for one. One year I used the same cover. It kind of split between the year. But otherwise, I have 8 years of the Teco, seven distinct covers. And then at some point in the near future, I'm going to order the Animal Crossing cover, which they came out with. This is the first year that I know of that for the video game stuff, it wasn't Mother 2 or Earthbound as we know it here. There was the Mother 3 cover. And then an Animal Crossing cover. And I want to get the Animal Crossing cover before it disappears off the face of the earth.
Now, I know these are from Japan. Mm-hmm. So presumably they're a little more expensive. Like the Hobonichi Teco and the covers are probably a little more expensive than if you just got like a day planner from a stationery store here, right?
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, you can find a dirt cheap day planner anywhere. Some of the better day planners, though, that are like, you know, sold here and made here in America or whatever, some of those can actually be a little bit on the pricey side. I got mine, I think it was $30 for the Teco.
For the planner itself?
Yeah, just for the planner.
What about for the cover, like this Animal Crossing cover? How much is that going
to
cost?
I'm going to have to search, but...
Or the most recent cover you have bought.
Well, the Mother 3 one I bought, and including the shipping from Australia, was about $50, something like that.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Holy crap.
That's the splurge for the year. I get the nice new cover.
Oh my God.
Anyway. So, but you can find them a little cheaper. You can also find them more expensive. I'm trying to think of what the most I've ever spent on one of the covers was.
Is it not $50?
No. You can go higher. Like, you can find them for like $100, depending on the cover. And what then the older ones become more expensive.
Oh my God.
It is a lovely little collection. Thank you. And you get to be extra cool every time you pull it out and decide to write down, oh, tomorrow I go to the dentist. Doo-doo. Oh, man, it's great. So anyway.
Yeah. Holy crap. Okay, so if you want to buy a day planner for about $80 total, assuming you can reuse an existing cover on a cover, consider the Hobonichi Teco. If that doesn't describe you...
They're glorious. They're beautifully made. They're full of, like, little inspirational quotes. There's, like... stuff about Japan on the back, in the back, and little note pages, and oh man, it's wonderful. I love it. The plan is to be a little old man and have like 50 of these accumulated.
Today's episode, we are talking about Nintendo Power, which was, you know, not the first video game magazine, but one that was made like by Nintendo to only cover Nintendo things. It's been kicking around, well, in our memories now, but it started publication in the late 80s. It was actually the follow-up to Okay. So I don't know. I can't remember completely exactly how people came to subscribe to magazines back in the 80s. I know you could go to a newsstand and find a magazine there, and there would be like a little slip in the magazine that you could mail in, right? You could mail in payment to an address, right? But Nintendo Power wasn't sold in newsstands. How Nintendo Power got its start was when Nintendo sold NES games in the US, there would be like a little slip in the case to join the Nintendo Fan Club. And the early members of the Nintendo Fan Club could get this small kind of zine type magazine called Nintendo Fan Club Magazine, which is largely forgotten. It only ran for about, I think, like 7 or 8 issues. It is immortalized in the game Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, when I think one of the characters, it might be Mike Tyson, anyhow, there's like quotes from the boxers between rounds. Actually, it might be from your coach, whatever. They say, join the Nintendo Fan Club today. But after a few issues, they instead mailed out this full-size magazine, Nintendo Power, to the existing Nintendo Fan Club magazine recipients. And it was a subscription magazine after that. At least I can't really remember back in the day seeing that in like newsstands, but I could be wrong. Do you, either of you have a different recollection?
Eventually you could buy it on newsstands.
I remember being, I think it was in elementary school and seeing it in the newsstand in Safeway.
Yep. Yeah, you could go into a Safeway or wherever and grab them. Cool. Did you ever have any of the
Nintendo Fan Club?
Yeah.
I didn't. My friend Jeremy got a Nintendo before I did, and he had, I want to say, like 3 or 4 of the Fan Club magazine issues. They're very small in comparison to Nintendo Power.
Hmm.
Like, they were definitely, it was kind of like a, you know, an experiment that they eventually ramped up to a much more ambitious full magazine. But I know I jumped on a Nintendo Power around issue 5 or 6, something like that.
Okay. Let me go through the stack. So for the readers who...
Yeah, what he means is that he has an actual stack of...
Yeah, that's all I was about to say. Yeah.
He's like, hey, let's record a podcast about Nintendo Power, and Robert decided to show up with a stack of visual aids.
Well, the idea was I thought people would potentially go through them before discussing, but everyone was feeling a bit lazy, I guess, so...
I have my memories. They're strong.
Anyway, our first issue of Nintendo Power is issue, or volume 73. And it has Weapon Lord on the front. Oh, and it looks like in this issue, the Nintendo Ultra 64 is unveiled. The NU64.
When is that from?
This is from...
Like 95 or something like that.
Let me crack it open.
No, it's okay. We can just guess.
I'm opening it. Thank you.
I think we probably shouldn't get derailed by opening up actual issues of Nintendo Power. Thank you.
I'm just seeing the publishing date, if that's okay with you, Senor.
It is not.
Too late. Ooh, Earthbound's in here. It's 1995.
All right.
So yeah, that was our first issue. And we have pretty much every single issue from that month forward. There's small gaps. Our aunt is the one who... subscribed us to this, and it would come to our grandma's house.
Do you, Robert, do you happen to remember, did she get the slip in a game, or?
I have no idea. I don't know if I asked for it or not. I feel like Linda just started subscribing us to it.
I'd be curious to ask her how she became aware of Nintendo Power.
You know, Nintendo Power went through phases, because there's like the very early days, which Zach was part of. Then there's this, you know, this almost 100 issue mark in the 70s where we come in, and this is like the late Super Nintendo, start of the N64 era. But then eventually, it's like partway through the GameCube era, Future starts publishing it. And like, it's still Nintendo's magazine, but it went through like this kind of editorial shift and change at that point. And it was still good, you know, and Nintendo Power was good from start to finish. But I would say all the way up until right before Future took over is like when Nintendo Power was at its best.
I feel like it was at its best until around like issue 30 or so. The earlier, I know I described Nintendo Fan Club magazine as kind of having a zine-like quality, but there is more like the earlier Nintendo Power stuff. Like while Howard Phillips was still there and they were still doing like the Howard and Nestor comics, it had more of like a ramshackle improvised people doing this for fun kind of feel to it. Like
less weird, corporate.
Yeah, like weird clay sculpture art in the magazines and a lot of oddball drawings and different art styles. More zany energy. There were some like real wild like contests or giveaways in the early days of Nintendo Power 2. Ones I remember are Dragon Warrior, like the first Dragon Quest game, was just straight up given away to every subscriber of Nintendo Power, including my family.
Oh, wow.
Which is crazy, right? Really cool. They just shipped Dragon Warrior to everybody. Yeah. And I remember when Final Fantasy came out, they promoted it in the magazine they published an entire free strategy guide for the original Final Fantasy. This is right when, because when Nintendo Power started, it was every other month, and it became monthly. But in the interim, there was a period of I guess 7 or 8 months where there was a regular issue of Nintendo Power every 2 months, and then some kind of special strategy guide or dedicated feature magazine on the off month. So there was like a Mario 3 one and a Ninja Gaiden 2 one, and one specifically for multiplayer games, and then the Final Fantasy guide. Mm. But in addition to publishing that whole free strategy guide for Final Fantasy, they also had a contest where the winners would be like you and your three friends would be the Light Warriors, and you'd go to like Hawaii or something. And there, it would be like a real life LARPing Final Fantasy adventure for four kids, which
they
is
still
crazy.
Kind of did that later into the series, though. Because Okay. Even when we were reading it, they were still doing those kind of trips. And one of the giveaways that stands out in my mind was you could get go-karts. Now, I don't remember if they actually had any kind of Mario branding or Nintendo branding, but like the carts kind of looked like the pipe frame carts from Mario Kart 64 and Super Mario Kart.
Mm-hmm.
And man, those looked super cool. I think you can win one or two. And then there were trips. If I'm remembering correctly, I think one of the contests involved The Mask, like the movie The Mask with mm-hmm. Jim Carrey. Mm-hmm. And like you could go on set. Either for that or the sequel, quote unquote, which I don't think ended up happening until years later. But there was all sorts of crazy things Nintendo Power would give away. You know, the strategy element of the magazine eventually kind of dwindled. But in the early years especially, it was neat how Nintendo was kind of obsessed with like wanting to make sure everybody knew how to play. And like the magazines themselves would have like maps and strategies. And then there's the dedicated players' guides. But I think what ended up happening is that as time went by, Nintendo started to realize, hey, we can make more money just selling the strategy guide as its own thing, not focus as much on like full details in the book, the magazine itself. And that's what ended up kind of happening.
Do you know, that's actually like the strategy guide aspect of Nintendo Power and Nintendo Fan Club is I think why those magazines existed.
Yeah.
Because they were predated by the game counselor hotlines, and it's just much more efficient to send out the advice in print than to have some 30-year-old, quote, game counselor in Redmond answering the phone.
Man, the game counselor thing was a big deal. Like, we never called it, but
yeah,
like
we
you
didn't
could call
either.
And get help. And then Nintendo Power would every month publish, I guess, questions that would pop up a bunch like on the hotline about particular games. So it's like, you know, everybody's calling and asking this. And so then they would put it into the magazine.
And you're talking about Counselor's Corner.
Yep.
I would be very fine with my career having been a game counselor.
Seriously. Yeah. Bring it back.
That wasn't like a lifelong vocation.
I would have made it a lifelong vocation.
I mean, you could write like strategy guides or whatever. This is really what you want to do for a living.
Yeah.
I think I've told this story before, but it's extremely relevant. Like I mentioned, my friend Jeremy got me into Nintendo and Nintendo Power. At some point, we had rented Iron Sword, which is the sequel to Wizards and Warriors. I don't know if either of those games are known to either of you. It's an early Rare game.
Hmm. I've heard of it.
Your dude with the sword. Mm-hmm. His name is Kuros. And he's out to defeat the wizard Malkil. Whatever. we rented the second one and got stuck on like stage 4 and could not figure out how to proceed. And we, this is at Jeremy's house, and we had asked Jeremy's parents if we could call the Nintendo Power, like, game counselor hotline. Mm-hmm. They're like, absolutely not. You cannot do that. So
is it expensive?
Yeah, there was a cost. I don't know what it was, but, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, I spent so much money to get you the console. I take you to rent a game, and now, like, these additional charges, it's not going to happen, right? So what we did instead... And I realized, like, at the time, we even realized this wasn't going to help us, but we wrote into Nintendo Power, how do you get past this stage in Iron Sword? And either the next issue or the issue after that, this was actually, like, printed. I don't know if it came from us, but it was the same question, same spot. We never rented the game again. We didn't, so it didn't help us get unstuck. But that was the best we could do, given the budget that we had allotted.
I wrote a letter to Nintendo Power. And they wrote me back. You know, Nintendo wrote me back. Nintendo.
Was it to Nintendo Power or to Nintendo, though?
I mean, I
think you just wrote to Nintendo.
I don't know. I mean, it came back with Nintendo letterhead, yeah. Not Nintendo Power.
What did you write
about? I don't even remember. I have it somewhere. I have that letter somewhere. And I also sent in a piece of envelope art. Not surprised they didn't print that.
I don't remember that.
Yeah.
You know, I never tried to send any of the envelope art in, despite loving looking at the envelope
mm-hmm,
art.
Mm-hmm.
I think when I finally actually tried to send some in, it was the last issue.
Mm.
And I drew a bunch of envelopes and sent them, mm-hmm. you know, hoping they would publish them. But, I mean, they probably wouldn't have published them anyway, but I think I sent them too late.
Mm.
But that was the only time I tried. I don't know why I didn't try before that, or to even write a letter.
Yeah.
Because I've had letters written and other stuff now, but Nintendo Power, I don't think I don't recall getting my name in there for any reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, like to Zach's earlier point, part of the fun of the earlier days of Nintendo Power was the sort of ramshackle feel of things. And like the first issue, so shout out Alameda Game Exchange, now defunct, but they used to carry game magazines and... They had issue one of Nintendo Power just sitting there. And, like, to this day, I don't know if it's some kind of reprint or if, you know, if there's something off about it. But as far as I can tell, it's a legit issue one. It's just a little rough. Like, it's kind of scribbled in a couple parts and just not in perfect shape. But I bought that. And it's funny, like, that cover, the iconic image of Mario. And it's like, who did they have make this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There was a guy, man, I forgot this guy existed until I brought it up right now. There's a guy on Twitter who was making a name for himself because he was getting hold of the original cover art from mm-hmm. the magazines.
Mm-hmm.
And he would either get hold of the art itself, or I think in some cases he might have actually gotten like the clay creations that they made for the covers.
How neat.
But you know, they were making all this stuff. There was, you know, nobody sitting at a computer 3D rendering everything. And you know, this was when Nintendo was less strict about like the super regulated way that everyone was supposed to look.
Mm-hmm.
Like even within their own magazine, it's like Mario didn't necessarily match like official mm-hmm. Nintendo art. And man, that's some of the best of the Nintendo art, is like when it wasn't, you know, super controlled and corporate and kind of bland. Like a lot of it looks neat now, but that stuff was fun because it was just people kind of letting their imaginations go loose.
That's why today with the official Nintendo art that'll come out, when it's more unusual, like for the last couple of winters, they've put out these images of Mario, like one of him wearing a scarf. And he's looking up with his arms crossed at the snow falling. It's so much different than just the kind of typical handful of poses that Mario was allowed to do. Or there was an image they put out recently of Mario sitting on the beach, I think. It was like, I think that's the one I'm thinking of. Yeah, there's like some of him sitting on the beach and he's like barefoot, no hat.
And it's cool too because some of it is a mix of 3D art, like mm-hmm. the scarf one you're talking about, that's a 3D rendering.
Yep.
But the image of him on the beach that you're talking mm-hmm. about, that's hand-drawn.
Yep.
And I loved that in the past few years they've been bringing back some of the hand-drawn mm-hmm. Mario art and even Zelda. Like they've
yep.
done some hand-drawn art for like Breath of the Wild. And
or this was a number of years ago now, but during festival season in Japan in the summer, they put out, oh man, this is actually a long time ago. this may have been even before like Majora's Mask came out on the 3DS or something. It's actually still the background on my phone. I keep bringing it from phone to phone, but it's this image of Link, of Twilight Princess Link, and he's wearing a yukata, and he has like a festival mask that he's pushed onto the side of his head, but it's Majora's Mask. And I think he even has a hand fan. But like, it's that unusual art of them, like of the characters in like just regular everyday situations, that is more interesting and kind of reminds me of these earlier pieces of art where, like Robert said, things were not as corporate. They weren't as controlled. It wasn't just a handful of typical poses that you normally see Mario or Link in.
It's still, I think, controlled. Like, I'm sure all that art you're talking about was signed off by like one of like three specific people.
Of course, it has Nintendo, to be. Whereas, they're not going to have somebody go rogue and just publish some art.
Well, that's the thing, though. Like in the Nintendo Power Day, like you probably could just, how's this look? It's like, it's fine. Yeah. Sure, we can put that in there.
Yeah. Right? Just the point being that it's just more loose. And
now there's probably an entire committee that approves every little image. And back then it was probably, was it Arakawa? The president of Nintendo of America, I think that's his name.
But yeah, I mean, just the stuff that has more personality.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It's cool because, like, so I think I've said this story before. It's a terrible story, but at one point we were running out of space for our copies of Nintendo Power, and I got Angela to come and butcher them with me. So we're like, we're going to save certain ones, but then go through and take out the articles and stuff from other ones that we, you know, liked a lot, and then just get rid of the rest of the magazine. So we lost, you know, a few Nintendo Powers from doing that. But my friend Phil from high school, he had all of his Nintendo Power, and it was basically parallel to when we were collecting. And he was like, I don't want them. You can have them. So all the gaps from our collection were refilled by Phil. And then now I have some doubles. And like, I think these magazines are so precious because they, for one thing, it's just, they're from a different era of, you know, how they would handle things, like the strategy guides and just the way they were written, everything about them. But also there's interviews and stuff in them, you know, like developer interviews and like background material that I think is really insightful. And what I've done is my office at the college that I teach at, I have set up a bookshelf or two, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to take all the doubles that I have of the Nintendo Power. So I took all the Phil ones that are extra, and I've put them on one of the shelves. And I'm like, I want to build up a library of these so that at some point my students can reference them if they want.
You know, looking at the pile here on the table, the spines of some of them are facing toward me, and that actually reminded me how they eventually started putting art on the spines. And with every month, you were building out a new piece of art that would appear on the spines when they were all put together on a bookshelf.
Yeah, it's cool because, like, the collections, you know, it's Angela and mine, but I'm the one who I'm housing them. And so I have shelves in my place where they're set up. And since I've taken out the doubles and even occasional triplicates, now it's just a continuous stretch of them, and it's neat seeing the images on the sides, and they're not quite perfect either. Like, they don't line up exactly, but it's cool. It's like Donkey Kong and all these other different ones that you can see, Link. For a minute, Nintendo Power got cheap, and they weren't doing the squared bound edge for the magazine. They were stapling them. And those ones are a pain in the ass to take care of because they are desperate to shred apart.
Mm-hmm.
But they did like maybe a year like that where it was the staples and they went back to having the bound edge. But there are a couple milestones in Nintendo Power that stand out, like the 100th issue. That felt like such a big deal. I remember when that came in the mail. I read that over and over and over like that. We have a couple that are, that one's not worn. One of them that's worn badly is by Angela. It was the Ocarina of Time issue. I brought that with me. It's in the stack, but
yeah,
that thing's falling apart because she read it so much.
Yeah, I mean, that reminds me of, I've talked about this before, but the Ocarina of Time Player's Guide, the official Nintendo one, I unintentionally kind of destroyed that. I mean, it still has the cover every single page, but I have hyperhidrosis, and so my hands sweat too much, and they've always been like that since I was a little kid. And not only did I carry that strategy guide everywhere, was just constantly reading it, but because my hands were always sweaty, it took its toll on the cover in particular, which is kind of not shredded, but bit falling apart.
It's like worn.
Very, very worn. And then the pages themselves.
I was definitely a little rough. Like, I wasn't trying to be, but just you're like flipping between using the controller and using the magazine, or just
when you're a kid, you're not
rolling all over and not really thinking about it. Taking out the posters and some of them. And
I forgot about the posters. Yeah, that was another thing.
I was thinking about the posters.
Like ugly art, like back in the day, which is like part of the charm of it, right? But that's just like some weird airbrush art for this Mega Man 3 poster. We did end up getting around the time the 50th issue of Nintendo Power came out. They offered like you could order a set of like 1 through 50.
Neat.
So we did that. We have like a kind of a good condition set of like issue 1 through 50. I don't know if we still have the old like original run, more like beat up issues.
One of the things I always loved about Nintendo Power was the magazine, like the catalog, excuse me. And
power
we got
supplies.
Yeah, power supplies. We got a few things from power supplies. And I was talking to Robert about this before we started recording. But the thing that I remember very distinctly, and I'm not really sure why, especially because I'm not a numbers person. We have the roll up calculators, which felt very technologically forward at the time in the 90s.
Sorry, maybe this was after my time, or maybe I just don't remember. What was Power Supplies?
Power Supplies was is this little mini catalog that would come with, I don't remember if it was every issue, but pretty regularly at least. And you could order a bunch of official Nintendo merchandise. And it was like plushies, sweatshirts, in this case, these roll-up calculators that we got. And those were really neat because they were, relatively small, but you would just roll it up into like a little tube, and then you would flatten it out and it would work as a calculator.
Yeah, I've used one of those before. Probably not a Nintendo Power provided one, but they're cool, but they're just not as nice in a tactile way as a standard calculator.
Yeah, I kind of remember having to push down a little hard on each button, but
it eventually kind of wore out. I still have it, and like the paper, it's like a paper overlay that has like the numbers and stuff. It would kind of pop out, and it's not in the greatest shape anymore, but we still have it. We don't have a lot of stuff from the power supplies catalogs. I think that'd been the Super Power Supplies catalog, but whatever.
We have the plushies, Robert was reminding me earlier. Yeah.
One of them, I believe, makes noise. If you click it, it's Mario from Mario 64 with the wings on his head. I don't even know how you would change the battery. You'd probably have to gut him.
There, I remember seeing a sweatshirt in the pages. And if I could go back in time, I wish somebody would have bought the sweatshirt so I could wear it.
Well, you know, it was interesting because like our aunt would get us stuff, and she got stuff from the catalog. That's how we got all the plushes. Like, we have a bunch of the little plushes, we have that calculator, but there were other things. And like, it's just so, like, if you go, you can actually find them online. Like, they're archived. People have done scans of the superpower supplies, but binders to hold the Nintendo Power magazines.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about those.
Watches. Like, there's you can get a GoldenEye watch, special controllers. Like, just so many different things. There's also the special, I think it's for the 100th issue of Nintendo Power, the Game Boy Pocket that you could get that was gold.
Oh, neat.
Now, I have a gold Game Boy Pocket, but this one, I think, actually had Nintendo Power on it. But man, all sorts of things like that. But the CDs that were shaped like the character heads.
Oh yeah.
So like they had like Diddy, for I think Diddy Kong Racing, like all these different ones, Yoshi's head.
Yep.
And I believe you could actually put the CD into a CD player and it would read it even though it was misshapen.
Yeah. Let me ask actually, when, You guys mentioned power supplies, which I have no recollection of. And like, as I think I've made clear, like, I think your first issue was like 70, 73 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I had already dropped off of Nintendo Power by that time. So I'm wondering kind of what else came and went. So I'm just going to list off features that I remember from Nintendo Power. And you guys can let me know if they were in the later issues. Classified information.
Yep.
Yes.
Counselor's Corner.
Yep.
Yes, as in they were still in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The letters to the editor.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Those are always in there.
And then, you know, like reviews, previews, not playing, whatever. But also the charts. I remember.
Oh, yeah. The charts talking about like the top 10, I think, of each category.
But it was a.
Yes.
But like at least back in the day, what I remember is there were like three different ways they had of charting. And they would ask like the critics, the players, and the dealers, like what was selling, what reviewed well. And I think like votes from subscribers, basically.
I can't remember if they separated it that way or not.
I don't really remember that myself.
But I remember thinking that was pretty cool. You could see sports games or whatever that didn't actually get that much coverage from Nintendo Power. It was still like high up on the dealer rankings, you know?
Yeah. One thing, and I didn't know that this was a Nintendo Power publication until much later, but Robert has the original run, the original publication of the Super Mario comic and the Zelda, A Link to the Past comic.
Yeah, Viz republished them a few years ago. We have the original copies of them.
Yeah, so Robert has the originals. I got the Viz republications. And I remember I was showing Zach the Mario one, and I was showing him... I was showing him the whole thing, but when he was flipping through it, he started laughing and saying that it was very clear that that comic in particular must have been really formative on me, just because of like the things that I like, or like the way that I'll draw, the things I think are cute. Like Zach was just like, this is clearly, this comic was very formative for
you. Yeah. You know, it's interesting because when the Viz versions came out, an account on Twitter, it's like a video game art account, was asking about a specific comic. And now I didn't realize that there had actually been other Mario comics published beyond what was collected in the volume that exists. And so the guy posts this image, I can't remember which character it was. And I swear, I was like, that looks just like the comic that's in the Mario one. And so I had commented and said, yeah, that's in the collected edition. And I don't know why the response was so negative, but this guy was like super incensed and was like, that's not in there. You've clearly never, you know, looked at it.
How fucking dare you?
Yeah. Oh, man. It's funny because it was late. Like, I was getting ready to go to bed, and I had, like, seen that he'd replied to me, and I was, like, turning the lights off in my place. I turned them back on, went to my shelf, and I grabbed my volume. And I know they're rare, which is part of the reason I think he said it. Like, he's like, yeah, you don't even know.
Yeah.
I took it, and then I took the reprint because I bought the Viz version. I threw it next to it, and I said, I own both. Yeah. And I go, I was mistaken. I go, because now that I'm looking at it, I see it's different than what I was thinking of. I'm like, but I own both of these. And he, like, totally kind of changed his tune.
So you're like... Your big win was not that you were correct. You were actually incorrect.
Yeah, I was like, I'm fine being wrong. So but just so you know, I don't have
just
it.
So you know, you were right, but I have this.
Yeah, yes. So you were right, but you were also wrong.
Yeah, it's like, no, don't talk crap to me like I'm some noob. It's like, I've been here since the beginning, my friend. It's like, I got this shit
on lock.
You don't
even care whether you're right or wrong. You just want the cred of be like, look at me, I'm the original Nintendo
fan. Like, I'm not the noob who bought the one from Viz. Like, I got the old school one. But
I actually, when I was growing up, I didn't really care for the art style of the Zelda comic. And it wasn't until I got a little older that I developed a greater appreciation for it. It's still not my favorite art. I think Link can look a little bit odd at times in that comic, but overall it's actually, there are some panels that are actually really beautiful.
Oh yeah. Like it's either My brain reads it as watercolor.
Mm-hmm. And it might be. It reminds me of some, especially because the colors are so muted.
It's definitely painted, mm-hmm. and it's freaking beautiful. Mm-hmm. Like,
are we thinking of the same Zelda comic? I don't think it's painted. I think it's...
I don't know that it's painted. I'm saying...
You're talking about the kind of like Links to the Past
base? Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was saying that the
line art itself is painted, I believe. Like, it's hand-drawn comic art, but the coloring was done with paint,
I believe. And I was saying that the muted tones of the whole thing remind me of watercolor.
And if it's not watercolor, it might be some acrylic, mm-hmm. but still, that's all painted.
And
it's definitely not computer coloring.
It's not computer coloring, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think it was last year or maybe the year before. I don't even remember how I came across this. It was maybe something that somebody posted on whatever social media platform. It was a picture of this particular Bowser plushie from Japan. It was like a UFO machine prize. And I saw it and just instantly knew it had to have been inspired by the art style of the Nintendo Power comic. So I just instantly fell in love with it. And there are lots of things that I'll see and then I'll just buy instantly. But this thing required some searching because I had to, it was like a collectible from the 90s, the early 90s. And I had to track it down and find it. But I immediately found a couple of listings on like eBay or something of this little Bowser plushie. I had to have him, and I got him, and I just love everything about him. But it's so cool having this this plushie that, like I said, it's like basically a piece of the art of that comic in my hands. Mm-hmm. Just so freaking cute. I love him so much.
Like Zach, I kind of mentioned this closer to the start of the podcast, but it was neat how Nintendo Power would have things like these comics in it. Like, it made it worth buying the magazine beyond just the strategy stuff. Like, for me personally, the strategy stuff was kind of low priority. Like, I don't really remember getting stuck in games and like, but see, the NES games were a different beast than even like the Super Nintendo ones. But like, for me, it was everything else that was in the magazine I loved. And the comics especially were super cool, particularly because now we had the Mario cartoon and then there was even the Zelda cartoon, which we shall not speak of. But as a kid, Zelda kind of meant nothing to me. And in fact, the comic that we got would have been one of the earliest exposures of Zelda that I cared about. Because, like, you would have the Zelda cartoon, but then there was the Mario cartoon, and the Mario cartoon is what I loved to watch. But as a kid, like, and I was actually telling this to my students the other day, too, I've always, like, pushed back on that narrative that video games make kids, like, uncreative, like it stilts their brains or whatever. Like, that, this would always, like, games always got my imagination going into overdrive. And so I wanted toys to play with. I wanted, like, shows to watch and like, books and comics to read. And so those two comics were incredibly formative because it was like some of the only media with the characters that wasn't, like, the games. And the cartoons, you know, were also similar where it was like, hey, it's the characters, but they're, like, doing the stuff I imagine them kind of doing. And it was always so fun to, like, go beyond the world of the video games and play that way. Like, being in the backyard of our grandma's house, like, we'd be pretending to be going on, like, Mario adventures and stuff in the pool. And then drawing. I used to love drawing all the characters. For some reason, I had a stretch of time where I would draw our Aunt Linda on a Mario Kart cart, interacting with the Mario characters and, like, throwing shells at them and stuff. I don't know how many of those I drew.
Yeah.
Peculiar.
Well, you know, Nintendo Power was obviously the most prominent gaming magazine of our childhoods, but there were others that we later dabbled in. I, in particular, started buying Tips and Tricks, not for the tips or tricks. I bought Tips and Tricks for the puzzle, the, like, block puzzles, it's every like
pixel
month.
Art, basically.
Yeah, and, you know, you had to... you know, fill in it, like, how do I explain it? Like, there was like a grid, and you would have instructions on, like, it was, you know, a numbered, like, numbered axes.
Think like Picross.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it would tell you, you know, like A5, you know, color this block in. And then you would do that until you formed a full picture. And I would get it. I remember actively thinking every month, I hope it's Link this time. and I don't know if I ever got Link. There may have been one. It may have been like maybe an Oracle of Ages or Seasons Link, maybe. Or it might have been something else. I think there was a Link. There was Link like one time. But I remember like Pikachu being one of the pictures. But yeah, tips and tricks. I just remember buying it every single month so I could do those puzzles.
You know, it's funny because that era, it's, you know, everything's still print. Like, there's all sorts of magazines. And the video game industry had so many fun, different magazines. Tips and Tricks is one. I always thought Electronic Gaming Monthly felt like the grown-up magazine, like, mm-hmm. compared to Nintendo Power, because they would cuss, yeah. and they would have the kind of more adult ads and games in there.
Yeah.
The child's idea of what grown-up means.
Yeah, that's right. Like, I always used to think, I hope none of my, you know, neither of my parents flips yeah. it open, because they might take it away, because yeah. EGM was the edgier one, but... all those magazines at the time were fun, you know, and there's some that were only around for a little while. I didn't bring them with me, but I have a bunch of like magazines that only lasted for a bit and then faded away. But that era was like, it was just so neat going through the magazines, and something about having that actual object in your hands versus just like, you know, a lifeless IGN webpage or something, like the memories that you get from it. And like, we have a stack on the table in front of us right now of these different magazines, and like flipping through them, like each one kind of takes you to a different period in your life. Like the later EGM stuff makes me think of being like high school into college. And,
you know, I actually don't think any of those magazines other than the early Nintendo Powers were that interesting. I remember picking up some EGM, trying a little bit of GamePro. I didn't really like GamePro at all for whatever reason.
Wasn't GamePro a local publication?
Yeah, I think GamePro was in Oakland. Yeah, or at least at some point they were in
yeah,
Oakland.
Yeah, I believe that.
And then I think Next Gen, and there's one called like Gamers Republic. I don't know. Like that was around for like PlayStation, Dreamcast era, I want to say.
I remember liking GamePro.
But none of them really had, I don't know, there's some kind of like a character to Nintendo Power that none of the other ones really had.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe because it was more of like an idiosyncratic in-house thing. I remember liking those various magazines well enough, but I eventually dropped off of buying these magazines altogether. Towards the end, the reason I was buying them is because like PlayStation Magazine or whatever would come with a demo disc, you know, and that demo disc was awesome because you could play like the first level of various games or
yes,
whatever.
Those demo discs, man, people mm-hmm. used to have those all mm-hmm. the time. I think our cousin Dominic had a few of them.
That actually reminds me, we got the Smash Bros. Smash Bros. Melee Orchestra CD mm-hmm. from an issue of Nintendo Power.
Yep.
And I feel really bad admitting this. I guess I will. I had a coworker who I had told him that we had that CD, and he kept bugging me and saying, oh, can I borrow it? So that way, you know, he could like rip the music. And I kept lying because I just didn't trust him. I mean, I don't trust anybody who's not me with my stuff. But I just remember lying to him and saying, I'm sorry, man, I can't find it. I don't know where it is. Like, that was not true. I just didn't trust him.
Do you have that right now?
Yeah, it is here in the house.
Okay,
for sure.
We don't know where it is.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't borrow it.
Don't officially know.
We have no idea where it is.
I was wondering where it was because I was trying to remember where it wound up. There's a few different CDs we have
yeah.
from across the years. I don't remember.
I think I am actually 100% positive I know where it is right now in the house. But yeah, I just didn't trust him with it. But that CD, I don't even know. Like maybe if I went and tried to see if somebody put it up on YouTube, I could find it. But that music is so good. It's so beautiful. Like the rendition of what's it called again? The Fountain of Dreams. That in particular is just an incredibly beautiful track. It's super dramatic and like over the top, almost like movie soundtrack kind of quality. I mean, it's just amazing. And I think it was recorded in front of a live audience, performed in front of a live audience, and recorded somewhere in Japan.
You know, Nintendo continues to be weird with the soundtrack stuff. We were in Japantown a couple weeks ago, and I saw the CD set for Animal Crossing soundtrack, Breath of the Wild, and I'm like, why don't you just sell this shit here? It's like, why am I looking at it in an import shop? Like, people would buy it. Like, yeah, I don't want some shitty Spotify list. And, like, let me buy this.
And the they're very expensive. Yeah, I was looking at one, and luckily I didn't buy it because Zach wouldn't have wanted it anyway, apparently. But they had the entire soundtrack of Final Fantasy XIV, you know, not Nintendo, but $75. And, like, I get it. It's an import. There's also a lot of music on there, but, you know, I'm not really looking to pay $75 for some CDs.
But going back to the magazines, you read Next Generation?
Bit, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we I think I've mentioned this in an old podcast, but I rediscovered Next Generation like within the past year. It was a magazine that I think came as a replacement for something that stopped coming to our grandma's house. So backing up a little bit, Linda got us Nintendo Power, but then Linda and grandma would occasionally like just subscribe us to certain things. So, like, we had the Spider-Man magazine coming. I will never forget my grandma being heartbroken because she subscribed me to Turtle Magazine and she thought it was Ninja Turtles. And then it came and it was just this cute little turtle. And she's like, oh, I'm sorry, mijo. I thought it was Ninja Turtles. I don't know what this is. But I liked it. Yeah, I was really small.
I remember reading Turtle and liking it, too. So grandma, grandma, it was there was a silver lining in that.
So we had, it was one of the magazines that went defunct. It was replaced with Next Generation. And I think there was just like maybe one, maybe two volumes at the house. And I was flipping through it recently and I was like, hey, I'm like, I didn't know that this magazine is like an industry magazine from back in the day. And so I love, you know, like the history of games and stuff, but I also love like industry stuff. And so, man, I've become obsessed with this magazine. I haven't been able to order more, but like back during the summer, I got my hands on about four or five extra copies and was accumulating it. That magazine was cool because it was just about everything that was going on in the industry at that moment. And so like late 90s, it was starting to talk about like online gaming, stuff like Ultima Online and the coming of like the PlayStation 2. And it was just, it's so neat. They're like little time capsules. I keep recommending them to my students. I'm just like, they have scans of these online. Like if you don't want to order the magazine, just go look at them, because then you can see what things were like, you know, 20 and 30 years ago versus now.
Don't make the Next Generation like accomplices in your ongoing quest to never let go of your childhood.
I want the Next Generation to read about Next Generation. Thank you. Well, it's funny because now you have it where it's mostly legacy niche stuff, but like Nintendo Power was replaced with Nintendo Force, aka NF Magazine. And NF's been pretty good. They're already at, I think they've hit 50 issues and they're going pretty strong. To me, the best video game writing, though, like in print, is coming from Europe, because Edge is really good. Edge is basically taking the place of Next Generation. It's more industry focused.
By Europe, you mean the UK?
Yeah. And then you've also got Retro Gamer, which is my passion. I love that magazine. Retro Gamer is devoted to everything retro. And like they're even like covering stuff that's like PS2 era and forward, but they cover everything old and they get hold of developers, they do interviews, they massively research everything that they write about. The Nintendo 64 issue just came out and they were talking about different things about the architecture of the hardware that you probably wouldn't read about anywhere, including stuff from developers who were like talking about tricks that they did to get more processing power. One guy, I wish I could remember what the game was, he squeezed some kind of processing power out of the N64 using a certain channel that I guess they would prefer he didn't. And so there was some kind of update later, and I guess someone from Nintendo was like, so now you can use this. Please don't do the thing that you were doing before. And like that's the kind of stuff I love reading about. And so you have that. There's a couple others. Like there's Nintendo... Man, I feel bad. I'm not going to plug them properly.
Isn't there a UK magazine, or at least it used to be called like Games TM or something like that?
I believe so. There's another Nintendo magazine right now. That sounds
very familiar.
Ninty Fresh, before I forget. Ninty Fresh is a new Nintendo-only print magazine. They're doing really good work, too. But like, if you want to go to the newsstand and find stuff, there's like nothing, practically. It's like, if you go to Barnes & Noble, that's the only place I can think of where you can find gaming magazines, and they're almost all UK-based magazines. And then NF you have to subscribe to. But Games TM, yeah, that was...
Is NF Nintendo Force or Ninty Fresh?
That is Nintendo Force. I've written a little teeny bit for Nintendo Force in the past.
I like looking back at these magazines because they are from a different time, literally. But I get no enjoyment out of reading games journalism today. And I don't really want to get too into it, but I appreciate that looking back at these magazines, you know, it was just about the games and it was about the industry.
Yep.
And with time, you know, yeah, they started, you know, diving into related, but like related topics, but kind of broadening the topics that they were talking about. But at the end of the day, it was just primarily focused on the games and the industry.
It's like there's a guy named Philip Summers who does the hand-drawn game guides, mm-hmm. and he had been like slowly but surely building up quite a devout following of people, and he was doing these like zine-type publications where it was strategy guides, but he was hand-drawing everything. And the most recent one he put out, I believe, was for the original Zelda, and then he was gearing up to do another one. God, I wish I could remember which is the one that he was taking pre-orders for. I think it was Metroid. And right as he was, like, taking the Kickstarter for this, someone came to him and asked him to stop. Or they were, like, basically telling him it would be a good idea if you, you know, maybe rethought this. Now, he was tactful. He did not say which video game company came and told him, basically, they didn't think it was a good idea that he was doing this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is, you know, an example of the shitty state of games journalism. A writer had gone onto their Twitter page and instantly just said, Nintendo told him to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, Philips made games that have used Konami properties
mm-hmm.
and that have used Koei Tecmo properties.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been either of them.
Right.
And you don't know.
Right.
And not knowing, they like matter-of-factly just said, Nintendo told him to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And he went onto Twitter and he said, I didn't say who told me to stop mm-hmm. and I'm not going to.
Mm-hmm.
And they barely, like, even retracted the mm-hmm. statement. But it's like, that's that kind of crap where it's almost not even fun reading nowadays. Like, the UK stuff that I enjoy,
mm-hmm.
I like it because it is just, like, hyper-focused on the games. Like, if you open Retro Gamer,
yeah.
Retro Gamer's just talking games. Edge can get a little political sometimes, but, you know, Edge is still pretty good. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, it's not fun for me.
Yeah. It's nauseating.
A long time ago, I was going on IGN. I followed IGN. I don't want to touch IGN with a 10-foot pole or really anybody else anymore. You know, I enjoy writing for Nintendo Joe because I can just stick to, you know, writing about games. And, you know, I run our Instagram account and I just stick to gaming news and happenings. And that's the way I would prefer it to be. And if, you know, if people have a problem with that, they're free to have that opinion. But I just don't. I have no interest anymore in the vast bulk of what's coming out of games journalism.
And you're talking about online stuff in particular.
Yeah. Right? I mean, and that actually, too,
it sucks. Ties into like clickbait and social media and all that mm-hmm. stuff is connected.
Ad part revenue, of the reason, like the revenue, just generally speaking.
Yeah. Like, I'm sure the print media stuff is less like that just because you just have a different client base, right? If you're IGN, your client base is advertisers who are paying per click.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are Edge or Retro Gamer, your client base is the people who actually buy your magazine to read it. So like the incentives are completely different.
Well, even that in itself is really disappointing when you think about it, that the incentive is just revenue, you know, for clicks, you know, clicks for revenue rather, as opposed to just writing for the sake of, you know, writing about the subject, writing about the industry. And now it's just about,
it was also fun too, though, because like the old print stuff was like some of the stuff, if you're going through it, would be like, oh, they'd never get away with writing that nowadays. And it was fun because it was like, it almost spoke to the kind of counterculture aspect of games that is maybe less so nowadays. I mean, I think games are more mainstream than ever.
Yeah.
But like at the point when we were reading and like EGM was at its height, it was a bunch of dudes writing about games and saying some off-the-wall stuff that you would never dream of saying today. And I'm not saying that that's necessarily good, but it's kind of refreshing when I go through it. Because it's like, you know what? These guys don't give a shit. Like, they're just kind of having fun writing about games. And then you have Nintendo Power, which was on a different spectrum. Like, Nintendo Power was more wholesome. Like, I remember being a little put off when in the later issues they'd cuss every once in a while. Like they'd say something was badass. And I'm like, you know, this is Nintendo Power. You keep it PG. But it was just so fun going through Nintendo Power. Like it was just so much about here's all these games that you love. We're going to hype them up because we're Nintendo's, you know, we're like, it's like the home broadcast station for a sports team. It's like they're never going to talk crap about Nintendo. And Nintendo Power was always very pumped up and, you know, energetic about the new Nintendo, whatever.
I would rather it be like it used to be, where write what you want and who really cares what, you know, if it offends someone, it offends someone. Everybody's going to be offended about something. And that's, I think, more true today than ever before. But not having to worry, you know, am I saying the quote unquote wrong thing? I think it's just, it's more, not authentic, but it's just a better situation when people can just write freely, and write what they want. And if you don't like it, you don't have to read it. You don't have to buy the issue or you don't have to click on the article, but, looking at these old magazines and, even remembering some of the stuff that I've read in these magazines, it was just a better time and place, I think.
Well, plus I also think it's a lot more special, these physical, you know, relics. Like part of me is like kind of, you know, forward thinking about there's stuff that doesn't need to be in print. You know, it's like technical manuals and stuff, like throw it on an e-reader. Why waste paper on it? But like the tangible nature of these old magazines, I can remember being on certain websites at certain points in my life and thinking, yeah, I remember when it used to look this way and you would click on it and there were different things that they would do. And there, you know, there's worth to that. But unless you go find some of this stuff, and a lot of it ends up getting just buried, you know, it's like, but with like these magazines, I can just go to my shelf, open it up, and can in some cases remember the actual day of reading it for the first time or what the weather was like and just totally being transported back, especially too, because the design elements permeate every bit of the magazine. And like, you can feel when it's an old early 90s copy of Nintendo Power versus it's a later 90s one, just based on the layout, on the type of art, on the type of computer art. I mean, like the styling of
the logo.
Yeah. I mean, the rare renderings for like the Donkey Kong characters is really rooted in that 90s technology. And you can't really recreate that. I mean, not unless you go through a lot of effort. Even some of the magazines now that are trying to sort of evoke the old school Nintendo Power feel, it's not the same thing. Like, I like NF Magazine, but it is not Nintendo Power. I think Ninty Fresh is fun, but it's not Nintendo Power. That one, I think, is trying less to be Nintendo Power, but still. But I think there's a lot of worth in physical magazines. Yeah.
Can I ask you, given the stuff that, because obviously you read a lot more current game magazines than either of us do. You waste a ton of money on these. To Angela's point, like, are there magazines that you'd recommend to her, someone who like looks at IGN or Kotaku or whatever and gets turned off of like games journalism, I guess, in general?
I think NF can rub me the wrong way every once in a while. Some of it will be things too, like they have a section where it's I think it's somebody's nephew or something, where he'll play something classic and give you his modern take on it. And I'm just like, oh, this is awful. But that's just me being maybe grumpy. But Edge also can start to get like a little nauseatingly political sometimes, but Those are two examples of magazines that sometimes go off the rails, in my opinion. Retro Gamer, I have yet to read it and be annoyed. Like, Retro Gamer is pretty much just, if you want to read about old games and it's just about the games and you get all sorts of cool information that you'd never get anywhere else, absolutely read Retro Gamer. It's probably the best video game magazine on the stands.
What about Ninty Fresh?
Ninty Fresh is cool. They're only about 4 issues in, so I can't really give a strong opinion on them yet, but the first couple issues that I've read have been pretty cool. A lot of just like kind of retrospective stuff about Nintendo. Ninty Fresh sort of falls, it's like the love child of Nintendo Power and Retro Gamer, basically.
Yeah, you know, I think Retro Gamer sounds like the most appealing to me, because I'm very, very picky about everything that I play, but especially too when it comes to newer games that come out. Obviously, even just in the last year or two, I've picked up a lot of new games that have come out, but by and large, when I'm playing games, I continue to return to really old libraries, from the Super Nintendo through, like, you know, the GameCube and the Wii, like that whole entire library of stuff. So Retro Gamer sounds like it would be most appealing to me just because my tastes tend to be older.
Yeah, Retro Gamer is cool because it'll highlight games that I didn't know existed. Like, Zach will frequently bring up games where I'm just like, what game is that? And I'll write it down and check it out later.
Yeah.
And Retro Gamer does that. That's what Nintendo Power did a lot. Nintendo Power would... And the thing is, Nintendo Power... I'm going to make an analogy here that people might not get, but there's a Chinese restaurant near our house.
Might not get.
It's a buffet. They're probably terrible in most people's opinions, but like... I like the food and it's comforting. Nintendo Power would recommend stuff that in some cases I'm like, okay, I don't think any other publication would care to give this 10 seconds of coverage, but they'll point it out because they thought it was quirky or fun. Now, in some cases, they were games that were like legitimately, this is a really good under the radar game.
And sometimes they were Daydreaming Davey.
Or in my case, Garfield's Nightmare. Angie bought me that for Christmas one year, and I asked for it because I'd read about it in Nintendo Power. It was a DS game. It was a platformer. And they were like, this is actually a really fun Garfield platforming game.
Oh,
and I'm like,
Zach's sitting here face palming so
like,
hard.
That's one of the things I miss the most about Nintendo Power is like the random crap. You know, yeah. It's like the low quality buffet item that they would occasionally point out.
Look, I get it. Sometimes that mascot stuff turns out to be good. Sometimes that your Tiny Toons game is made by Treasure, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes a Spyro the Dragon game on GBA is actually good for some inexplicable reason.
Cool spot.
Shout out to Nintendo Life. They recommended a game called Tori the other day. Tori 2 just came out and it's $1. And so I'm looking and they're describing it and then I'm looking at the art and it's old school, low poly N64 era graphics. And I'm like, oh, this is so freaking cool. It's just a little mascot platformer. It's super straightforward. It's like, I don't know, 10 levels per game, $1 each. So $2, you get these two awesome platformers. I never would have given it 2 seconds worth of thought if they hadn't highlighted it. But
that is something that I guess games journalism can do, and I think it's something that Nintendo Power was good at, is surfacing games you wouldn't have known about otherwise.
Well, you know, it's interesting because we're talking about the impact on our childhoods. So we have family, and I have them subscribed to NF Magazine because I remember, like, it was so fun being at grandma's, and then the magazine would show up, and pretty much all of our, you know, family loves video games. So I'm like, I'm going to make sure they get NF, you know, every time it comes out. And they will talk to me when it comes in. Like, hey, I got the latest issue. It had this poster. It's super cool. I put it on my wall. And I'm like, it makes me happy because I'm thinking, you know what? I hope that when, you know, years go by, they'll have this little stack of these magazines. And then they'll be doing what we're doing now. And like looking through and remembering, yeah, I remember when I was, you know, in middle school or high school, and we would get the magazine all the time.
And they're clipping out their favorite parts.
Oh, God. You know, we have some copies of, like, EGM that have bits cut out. Like, we'd use them for projects. Like, Angie had cut out some stuff from one or two magazines for school, and I know I did the same thing. Yep. And it's a little annoying because I'm like, oh, I wonder what this said. I can't read it anymore. But you know, back in the day when EGM's 100th issue came out, their number one game of all time, does anyone know?
Can you tell us when it came out?
It would have been mid-90s, I think. Mid to late 90s.
Number one game of all time.
Yes.
It really depends when it came out. I'm sure it was something that just came out a couple years before that. If that, it's probably some new flash in the pan thing.
Okay, what do you think, Andrew?
The greatest game of all time in the mid to late 90s?
Yep. I believe the PlayStation was already out and the N64 might have already been out when they put this list together.
Duke Nukem. I'm trying to avoid the obvious answers. Like, I don't think it was, you know, the original Mario. I don't even think it was probably Mario World. Maybe Mario 3? I know that's an obvious answer, but...
The number one game, according to EGM, in issue number 100, was Tetris.
Oh, wow.
Total off the wall. You know, and they were serious about it, too. They put Tetris as the number
one
game.
That's a safe choice.
I remember EGM, like, they used to love to talk crap. And it's something that, again, like, you don't see now, right? I saw, I wish I could remember who it was. Some publication online was saying, like, you know, we need to stop talking about lazy game developers. And then here was EGM, the exact opposite. They had the shame of the month. And it was a little poo swirl silhouette that they would put. And it was like, this game is garbage. And then they had no sacred cows. Like, they did not care about, like, holding up certain games. Yeah. So, like, they had done a list of, like, overrated games, and they had like Banjo-Kazooie, which Zach would agree with. They had a bunch of games that are like, they're now considered like great games, but they were like, oh yeah, these games are not that good. Oh, it was like, it annoyed me when I read it, but in retrospect it makes me laugh because I'm like, we need more of this.
It's good not to be rude exactly, but good to have strong opinions and be willing to share them.
Yep.
Full-throated, unashamedly.
I wonder, for all the complaining I've done about modern games journalism, I wonder if I should just, instead of complaining, merely complaining, actually write what I would want to read. Start my own little zine.
You are a staff writer for Nintendo, Joe.
Yeah, you know, can't commit to a full magazine. I can barely commit to a blog post a month on my style blog, but
I think at the very least you can seek out print games journalism, which is less likely to enrage you.
Yeah.
Yes, seek out print. I recommend everyone seek out print over anything else. Like,
I mean, I prefer tangible media anyway. I get every quarter. It's a quarterly journal. Zach despises it. But I get Magnolia Journal with Joanna Gaines. He's over here just feigning outrage. And I just, even though not every single article or whatever interests me in every journal, I just like having something to physically pick up and read, and then always have to look back on, because there are recipes or there is something that you want to reference again. And I mean, that's exactly what we're talking about here. You know, Robert looking back at old Next Generation or old Nintendo Power, old Tips and Tricks, and referencing old material. That's why I like tangible stuff, especially too, because with online media, you know, an article gets taken down permanently and you don't even know. You try to follow a URL in a year and you get a 404 error.
Yeah, websites go under,
or somebody, you know, they make stealth edits to an article and it's not exactly what you read the first time.
There's a permanence to the magazines. You know, taking that part of it out, because, like, there's also the tracking element of it, where it's like, hey, if I go on to IGN, there's 1,000 different things following every click that I make and all that kind of crap. But if you take that out of the equation, like, we're positioned at that perfect middle point of hardcore physical everything into the digital era. And so, I have memories of both. Like, you know, I have really strong memories of those colorful IMAX when I was in like middle school and interacting with them, and then starting to use the internet in high school and being on like library computers. So like there are digital things that I have memories of, but I just feel like they're not as distinct and they're not as powerful as the stuff that is physical. And like these Nintendo Power copies, when I'm flipping through them, like the actual feeling of the paper in my hands is a trigger of old memories, and the smell of it. And then, you know, like we mentioned earlier, the visual design work of it all. And like, you just kind of wonder what people are missing out on when everything is not physical. It's just this, and basically endlessly marching forward, you're abandoning the old technology. Like people go through phones. My girlfriend's unusual, I think, in that she keeps all of her old phones, and she like,
I do too.
Well, yeah, but she like uses them for stuff. Like she'll go through games and pictures. So like in that sense, I think there's some connection, but like for somebody who is just eternally in transit, or it's like, okay, time for the new phone, the old one's gone, all those apps and pictures and everything like doesn't all carry over, just forward, forward, forward. And it kind of makes me wonder what the past will be like for them when all of their past is just kind of memories. It's almost like an old school
return. I don't think it's physical versus digital. I think it's just there is a more ephemeral style to things today. Like Facebook or whatever, any given website is like changing bit by bit all the time, right? So it's less specific. It's more like a mall where like one storefront at a time changes out, you know, mm-hmm. like the, now this used to be a sunglasses cart and now it's whatever, mm-hmm. right? Just like piecemeal, things are changing all the time. I do still have like strong memories of web pages that don't exist anymore. Like mm-hmm. Zofar.net, which is like a big emulation website, mm-hmm. Or the Ogre Battle webpage for vampires.
It's funny. It's almost like even those earlier days of the internet were more interesting than current internet.
They were more interesting.
People talk about MySpace a lot and yep. like the nostalgia for how that page used mm-hmm. to be. I guess there's some social platform that just launched that is like mimicking the look of MySpace from back in the day. Mm-hmm. And it's appealing to people.
Ooh, I got in trouble for making a MySpace. I wasn't supposed to make a MySpace, and I did at a friend's house, and I got in big trouble for that when I got home. But yeah, that feeling of a MySpace page, there's nothing like it. Even thinking back to like, how many years ago is that now? Like 12 years ago, like Facebook of like 12 or 13 years ago, completely different look and experience. I remember when I was in middle school and like fanfiction.net was every day, you know, checking these authors that I would follow for their Zelda fanfics. closing my eyes and thinking of the way that interface looked is just so early internet, so archaic feeling now, but so much more charming and interesting.
To which I say, I think the most charming and interesting are these old magazines and Nintendo Power in particular. I think that it was definitely special. It lasted, well, EGM had comebacks, but for the most part, Nintendo Power went uninterrupted longer than just about anything else. And, you know, in the years since, everything's pretty much gone. You know, it's like you're down to, again, these homage magazines, these niche magazines. But
I think, I don't know what else you can expect, because, like, people aren't as drawn to print as they used to. And print isn't, like part of the value proposition of Nintendo Power EGM was giving you access to information that you would not have without that magazine. And now by the time Game Informer comes out, everything in Game Informer is old news, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Is Game Informer still a thing?
Yes.
Man. Yeah, it is a little behind when you get each issue each month. Mm-hmm. That's why, like, with, I think part of what allows Retro Gamer to survive is that it's, I mean, for one thing, it's giving you history that's not a wiki. You know, and it's like, mm-hmm. I know people love going to stuff like Wikipedia, but Wikipedia is not formal. You know, it's just fan-made. And there's definitely information to pull from it. But if you're, like, really curious about the past and want to know things and you want something that's reliable, stuff like retro gamer is invaluable. And so there's that value to it.
Yeah,
and
it's not even just that, because like in case of Wikipedia, it's not even like that the contributors aren't trustworthy. It's that Wikipedia has like standards for notability and stuff. So like a lot of stuff that would be interesting that you can put in a magazine like Retro Gamer will get taken out of an article if somebody puts it into Wikipedia.
Well, the other, I mean, Wikipedia is, you do have to be careful with it, though. Like, I've come across entries that had just had factually inaccurate information, or information that is taken out, frankly, for political reasons or otherwise. And there was something that was there, you know, a year ago, and now it's gone because of some event that happened.
No, I know what you're saying. But, like, yeah. There is a thing where, like, over time, certain kinds of Wikipedia articles have gotten less in-depth. Not for political reasons, mm-hmm. but just, like, or, like, organizational political reasons, where it's like, well, this is what the scope of this page should be, mm-hmm. and then it just goes nowhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like it's cool with retro, because it's like you just grab that thing and it's all this historical information, but then those interviews that they do, like when they're getting hold of these people who, you know, it's like, oh, I was the sound designer on some random ass Sunsoft game 30 years ago. Like, they find these guys and women and talk to them, and like that is what makes that magazine able to just continue surviving, because you're not going to get that information anywhere else. And but also, this, you know, even the old stuff, you know, like I have all these copies of Nintendo Power still. I still get next gen when I can, because all that information that was written is just so interesting. It's like I learned an entire chain of ownership for, oh, God, I'm going to forget what it is. It was like an internet game company that EA just bought, but like it had ties back to like some ancient online game playing website, like I'm forgetting what it's called.
Newgrounds?
No.
Congregate?
Not Congregate, but like, you know, back in the day you would have to go and like the way you would access the internet was different. So for like the people who aren't ancient in the room listening to the podcast, like the days of like AOL, like the way you would mm-hmm. use AOL to get online. And like mm-hmm. in some cases, I think you'd be paying per minute, right? Like for access to the internet. So like if you wanted to play online gaming, there were these different websites that hosted it. And so it's like at Super Nintendo, you could play online. It was called X-Band. And like there's like a chain of ownership that takes you from like X-Band all the way up to this company that just got bought by EA. I'll try to remember it for the next podcast, I guess. But I was really fascinated by it, because I was like, oh, wow, this thing's actually pretty damn old. And the only reason I even knew is because I had just read the article in Next Generation. Like, making those connections is fun for me, at least.
Very cool. Any I think we've probably said our piece on Nintendo Power. Is there anything else anyone wants to cover?
No. I think we've just about covered it.
I got it. I wrote about this when I read it. So, X-Band was picked up by Catapult, which in turn ran M-Player, which was eventually acquired by GameSpy. And GameSpy was picked up by Glu Mobile. And Glu Mobile is what EA had just bought back in...
This is a while back,
right? I wrote this in May, right before my birthday. So that whole chain right there, I was like, oh, that's so random and kind of cool. Yeah. I don't know why I think it's cool, but... Yeah.
I think the closing anecdote here is just, if you are interested in you know, games history, reading about the industry, and especially reading about the industry as it was, especially as it was developing, which was a very interesting time. Pick up old gaming magazines if you see them at, you know, in thrift shops or flea markets, or even if just go online, you know, eBay, stuff like that. Pick them up, preserve them if you can. Because eventually they probably will wind up in a landfill if you don't. And with it, it takes all of that information. So
before I forget, this will be how I'd like to end it. To Angela's point just now, don't throw them out. So I actually had read a Retro Gamer piece that, it annoyed me. The guy talked about how, quote unquote, nobody wanted any of the magazines he had, so he threw them away. Don't throw them away for the love of God.
Donate them to a library if you don't want them.
But the Smithsonian wants these. Mm-hmm. So the Smithsonian has been taking donations of game magazines, mm-hmm. players guides, all that kind of stuff. So if you have a collection and you don't want it, mail it to the Smithsonian. They'll tell you how to get it to them. They'll probably pay for the shipping, I'd imagine. But there's other... Or
try to contact one of us.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like, you know, if you want to send them to Cal State East Bay, send them there. I'll take them and catalog them. But there are people who want them. There's the Video Game Museum in Texas. There's the National Video Game History.
This all sounds like such a hassle. I'm just going to recycle them, guys.
Ignore this man. Here. But yeah, seriously, donate them where you can because they are irreplaceable. Once they're gone, they're gone. You know, there are websites where people are archiving them, like they actually take them and scan them. But like, it's good to have the actual magazines. So get in touch with the university. Like I said, if you're local here, Cal State East Bay, tell them that idiot Robert who has the podcast said he'll take magazines. They'll get them to me.
Yeah. I think it's gotten to the point where people are recognizing the importance of video games on pop culture, on really society at large. You know, I don't want to act like video games are the most important thing in the world, but they are definitely more important than I think most people give them credit for, from an artistic perspective, from a writing perspective, from a technological perspective, and just like preserving books is important, extremely important in my opinion, particularly physical, tangible books. Likewise, I think it's really important that we preserve this old written history, really, of an industry as it was growing, as it was changing. I think it's important to preserve that. So do, if you can, if you just have these piled up and you don't want them, yeah, you know, either donate them to a library, give them to someone you know who really genuinely wants them to preserve them, or, you know, reach out to the Smithsonian, reach out to these different organizations that really do want them.
Realistically, yeah. If somebody has like two spare issues of Game Pro sitting in a closet, no one's going to want that.
I'll take them.
Somebody will want them.
Donate them.
You can even donate them to, like I said, to thrift shops. You know, we have Savers on this side of the country, which is, it goes by a different name in different regions, but Goodwill, you name it, different thrift stores.
Salvation Army, mm-hmm. St. Vincent de Paul.
Yeah, you know, they will take magazines and old magazines because they know people want them for different reasons, whether to read them or to, you know, repurpose them for some reason. But just don't just throw them away because you never know. You donate those two issues of GamePro to a thrift shop or something, you know, there's somebody like us who's looking for them wherever you are in the world who's, you know, truly one man's trash is another man's treasure. So
final thing is just like keying off of something Robert said, like there are magazines that you can find scans of online. And at least last time I checked earlier this year, the first, I don't even know how many issues of Nintendo Power are available online. Like you just find and look at PDFs. So if you're curious if you remember reading Nintendo Power back in the day and you want to browse around, just Google around, you'll find it. I don't have a link to read online or anything like that, but it exists. This has been 7 Minutes, episode 20, talking Nintendo Power. Thanks for joining us.